As always, thank you for being here this morning. We certainly appreciate the presence of one and all. I would encourage you to, when I get through this lesson, if you're a parent, to think seriously about talking to your children about the lesson I'm going to teach. But I think it's a good lesson for all of us at any age, and certainly would be of a benefit to all of us. I thought of this lesson simply because of a couple of things. One was Glendon sent me something through the email, and then Roger had talked not too long ago about how much we need to certainly encourage those that are younger maybe are not Christians and some that are. But also at any age group, certainly it would be a good thing. What Glendon sent me was, he talked about this young man. His name was Jesse. He was a chicken plucker, and if you haven't seen this, I actually looked it up to make sure that the facts are correct, and it is, or they are the facts. And his father, he was the fourth son. He came along late in life, and his father they were very poor, didn't have much, as I read other things about this, and life was really hard for them. And he then had a mental breakdown and was very mean to especially Jesse, and didn't treat him very well, and they grew up in West Virginia. And then after the father passed away, it was said that his mother took them to Morgantown, and he had to take jobs just like she did, and life was rough, and his brothers treated him awful. He didn't have a good life at all. As a matter of fact, it was a horrible life. You just wouldn't be of the type of life that you would want. But when he started to school, it turned out that they treated him the same way. He was just a skinny little thing and couldn't protect himself and had learned basically just to take it from everyone because of the way he'd been treated at home. So he had a tremendously rough life and again had taken this job to pluck chickens. But as he was doing that, he started dreaming about doing something different. And he thought he wanted to be a ventriloquist. So he started doing this with socks, and eventually over time he wanted to work his way into maybe entertaining people. But he, again, shy, had problems with people. He ended up going into the Army. And when he got into the Army, they recognized that he's got major problems. He's hypochondriac. He always thought things were bad. Again, very skinny, didn't do very well. And so they decided he would do better in entertainment. So they got him to do that, and he found something in life that was good. And you know, when he never really overcame, and you'll know this when you know who he is, he never really overcame things in life, but he learned to deal with them and do the best he could, and he used that as an object to make other people appreciate him. And so eventually, even though he struggled with life, he actually received the most Emmys, and you can go look this up, and he received them every year for years. And Jesse is Jesse Don Knotts. And you can understand now about his life. But he knew that he needed to make his life the best he could. And so the question is, who am I? I'm certainly looked at his life and thought, now who am I? I'll never amount to anything in life. But he decided something had to change. Something had to be better. So what molded him, what made him what he was? All the things he had to put up with when he was young. He overcame those things, even though, as most of us know, he certainly played that role very well, and he learned to use that in his life. But more importantly than that, doesn't matter how many Emmys you win or anything like that, what does matter is we have folks that God has on His list, that God reveals to us things about that certainly would help us. One of the things that I thought about this, and I thought about what David had to say. David asked Nathan, he said, please ask God if it's okay if I build him a house. He said, I've got a nice house and I want him to have one. And Nathan said, I'm sure it's okay. And then Nathan came back and said, no, here's what God said. No, you're not going to do that. And other places would give us reasons why. He had certainly not... Because he was a bloody man, because he had been in a lot of battles, he was not allowed to build the house of God. But what God said to him was, he said, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take care of you. He said, I'm going to bless your house all the way down to the end. I'm going to actually bring a king through you. And in addition to that, I'm going to make sure that your house is always a king. In addition to that, I'm going to take care of everything for you. And eventually, though, through your son, I'm going to take the kingdom away. But I will let him build a house. This is David's reply to that. And it's not all of his reply, but I just wanted to use this part. He went in, he sat before the Lord. He was awed by this. And he said, "Who am I, O Lord God? And what is my house that you have brought me this far? And yet this was a small thing in your sight, O God, and you've also spoken of your servant's house for a great while to come," all the way down, as it were. And he may not have realized this, or he may have, that all the way to Christ. "And it regarded me according to the rank of a man of high degree." You can see that David looked at himself totally different from the way we look at him. He's very humble. He understood where he came from. Just a shepherd boy out there in the field and chosen by God. "What more can David say to you for the honor of your servant? You know your servant, O Lord. For your servant's sake and according to your own heart, you have done all this greatness. In making known all these great things, O Lord, there is none like you, nor is there any God besides you according to all that we have heard with our ears." If you get a chance, go back and read 1 Chronicles 17. Absolutely beautiful. And you can also find it in Samuel's account, but for Samuel. But this is an amazing account. And I thought about young people. And I thought about Joseph and how we are molded from youth and how lots of times we actually go through things and we'll realize that we're doing something because that was the way we were trained at youth. It's hard for us to make changes in life, and sometimes it's hard for us to overcome things. And sometimes if we've gone through abuses or we've gone through things, it is difficult for us. And God knows that. But He's given us ways to get out of all that. He's given us ways to improve ourselves. He's given us ways to use all of that so we can better ourselves. Not just like a Don Knotts, but like a Joseph. At 17 years old, he's at home. Things are good. He's pated rotten. He's given everything. He is the young man. He doesn't like what his brothers are doing, so he tells his father, and this goes on. He has dreams, and boy, do they get upset with him. They get so upset with him because his father showed the partiality, that they hate him. They literally despise this young man who's their brother. So they want to kill him. Can you imagine growing up in a family and all the rest of your brothers, this time 10 of them, and I don't know that Benjamin was involved in this because it doesn't say anything about him, certainly he's too young, but 10 of your brothers actually want to take you out and kill you. Would that affect your life? Would that put a dent in your life for later on? Would you look back at this time and think, "I just can't live. I'm going to do something as a result of this." That's our excuse, by the way, for doing anything we choose to anymore. Instead of killing him, they made a decision. They sold him into slavery. Now, they sold him to the Midianites, and it also says the Ishmaelites, because they were obviously traveling together. And he goes down into Egypt, and they sell him to Potiphar. Now, Potiphar is an important man in this country. He's an officer of Pharaoh's. And he has lots of things. And it is seen that Joseph is one of those people who knows how to do things. He's very ambitious. He does the best job that he can. So Potiphar puts him over everything. Potiphar recognizes that at this young age, this man knows what he's doing. Now, in our second lesson, we'll maybe discover a little bit more about why this all occurs. This isn't just something that just happens. Potiphar's wife tempts him. She wants him to do something that's immoral. He refuses to do so, and thus she falsely accuses him. His life's pretty good so far, right? I mean, 17 years old, his brothers want to kill him, he's sold into slavery, and now somebody else wants to take advantage of the situation and get him in trouble, and eventually ends up in jail, right? So, he's imprisoned. Dude did nothing that he was deserving of this. There's not one thing he's done in his life that he deserves this. What did we study in class today, this morning? Tribulations produce patience. We're going to see Joseph is going to let this improve him, not destroy him. He's able to interpret the dreams of both the butler, which was good, and the baker, not so good. One's going to survive and be put back in his position as a chief butler. The other one is, the chief baker is not going to make it. He's going to end up being killed because he had done some things that Pharaoh was very upset about. Joseph says, "Please, do me a favor. Would you just kind of mention my name when you go back to your position so that maybe, just maybe, I can get out of this prison? Because he was doing well in prison for being in prison, but that's not where you want to be. So you would think that the butler would remember that. Well, he does 2 years later, only after Pharaoh has a dream. So as young people, when you think your life is so tough, think back to Joseph. Think back to the excuses he could have used. Think back to how he could have lived his life, how he could have used all of this and said, I've got a right to do some things. But at 30 years old, some 13 years later, life gets a little bit better. 13 years he's had a tough life. 13 years he had, up until 17, he'd been in a lap of luxury. For 13 years his life's been miserable. Things aren't good. Never once lets that deter him. Never once lets that get him down. After interpreting the dream and telling about the 7 years of famine and the 7 years of, or excuse me, 7 years of good and then the 7 years of famine, he is made second in charge of everything. Now this one is probably the worst. All those other things he overcame. But I got to tell you something. 30 years old, in a nation that is strong as Egypt, and you're made second in command, you think you wouldn't have the biggest head in the world? You're thinking, I did this. I pulled my... He did not, by the way. But think about that for a moment. As a young person, never ever, because this one is going to be worse than the rest of them. You don't think it is, but it is. This one is going to be the hardest temptation to overcome because he's got power, he's got fame, everybody knows him, everybody knows what he's done. So he's put in charge of collecting goods for 7 years. After he warned them through God, we'll talk about later, then he's put in charge of it. Then, the next 7 years, he's put in charge of distributing them. So now he's over 37 years old. And what happens? He's reunited with his family. His brothers come down and they need some food. They don't recognize him, as we know. He recognizes them. Why am I telling this story over again? When you talk to your young people, your children, your grandchildren, or whoever you might have an opportunity to talk to, and they start telling you, life is hard, you have no idea, you tell them. Yeah, you do. You may not have gone through that, but you know someone that did. His name was Joseph. And you know that regardless of what you go through, if you treat it right, life is good. Being reunited with his family, he then does things correctly, as we'll talk about later. But at death, you know what he decides? He says, hey, I remember a promise has been made. I want you to take my bones, he's 110 years old now, I want you to take my bones and take them with you when you leave this land. That's amazing. That is amazing. He did never once, that we're aware of, let any bad thing or anything that could have deter him from doing what was right. To the very end of life, he determined that he was going to do what was right. Who am I? Am I Joseph? Have I, at 60 years old, could you look at the end of my life? Could you say, well, I've made the best of any bad things that may have happened in my life? How about you? Then there's Daniel. Quite a few years down the road, about 1300, this young man comes along and here he is. And it could be 605. I put these dates up. By the way, my dates aren't, you know, I don't have anything any more magical than anybody else from being able to look at them. We look at things that and look at events and try to figure them out. And we look at the best possibles of all the people that look at these things. But he was young. It is believed, and if you've ever wondered why they picked these ages of 14 to 18, it's because they wouldn't take anyone older than 10 because they couldn't train them. If you reach a certain age and they want to train you, they've got to start at an age where they can manipulate you, and that's what they did in those days. And they took these young men for several reasons. If you study history, they did it for the reason of getting them to where they would be serving them, number one. Number two, they used them as leverage. If you have these young men and there's nothing that you can do about it, what's the kinfolks going to do? Well, they're concerned because what could you do to these young people? You could take them out, march them out, and kill them anytime you chose. Matter of fact, we know that three of them were thrown into a furnace later and could have died, but God saved them. So it shows how perilous their condition was. We know that he was in a royal family. That's the ones they chose. They chose young men that could be the type of people that they wanted because they just didn't want anybody. They wanted the best for, again, a number of reasons. They knew that they were the better educated. They knew that they were the ones that they could use their leverage. He was a descendant of Judah. Here he is. He's completely removed from his family. The greatest force on earth at that time was the Babylonians, the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans came in with Nebuchadnezzar as their king. Now, his father had started this process, and when Nebuchadnezzar became king, he decided he wanted the whole world. And as most of you know, and we've talked about it several times, it's where Iraq is today. And it was an area where they were very powerful. As a matter of fact, they are described as the golden kingdom, both by God and by man. They were the pinnacle of a worldwide power. He was the best. When you look at all the things that he did from history, you find that Nebuchadnezzar was one of those men that had tremendous power. God warns him several times, but he would had these beautiful gardens and all of these things that he had built throughout. Many of the other nations would come and use Babylon for a while until Babylon was finally destroyed. But Daniel, so he's completely removed. He's in a foreign land. He has no idea what's happened maybe to his own family. We don't know if he knew if they were dead, alive. We don't know anything else. We just know he was brought down there as a young man. Why was he brought there? They wanted to teach him Chaldean ways. They wanted him to completely forget everything that he had ever learned. They wanted to wipe that clean. They wanted to brainwash him to make sure that he would serve them loyally. What would you do? What if today you were taken as a young person to China? What if today you were taken to a place and they said, we're going to wipe clean everything you've ever known. We're also going to use you as leverage against everybody else. We're going to make sure that those folks, and don't tell me it doesn't happen, how many times do other nations take hostages and hold us hostage to the use of those? This is just as true in these days. Needed to rid him of all those Jewish ways. Did not want him to have those anymore. Did not. Now, I don't know about the rest of you. When I was about 14 years old, I would have been pretty susceptible, wouldn't you? I would have walked in, let's say, between those ages and said, okay, I don't know where my mother and father are. I don't know if they're alive or dead. We don't know anything about it. I'm just going to go on. God will understand. God will understand. What's the first thing he does? Well, they're getting ready to train him, and they've got this certain diet. Why would he refuse such a diet? Well, because however they were preparing the meats or whatever kind of meats they were preparing obviously went against Moses' law. Wow, this young man knew the law. He says, no, won't eat it. The guy said, I'll tell you what, you could get some serious trouble over this. I'm not sure this is going to work real well. He said, okay, give us a little bit of time. If we do better than the others... That's pretty smart, isn't it? That's saying, I trust in who, right? He refuses to follow their idol practices. He will not do it. He will not worship anything that they have. He will just won't do it. He just flat out refuses as a young man. He says, no. That's amazing. There he is before King Nebuchadnezzar. Well, he interprets the king's dream, the first dream, and he tells him, about how powerful, you know, and he is and so forth. But he also talks about the kingdoms that are to follow. That's what the dream was all about. He teaches him, though, about the God of heaven. Wait just a second. You're before the king who's in charge of all the earth, who's telling you, I don't want you to do those things anymore. And you turn around to him and say, let me talk to you about God, the only God. Would you have the courage? What does Nebuchadnezzar do when he interprets the dream? Well, he praises God. He hasn't gotten all of it out of his system. I'm not saying that Nebuchadnezzar made a change overnight because of Daniel. He did not. But he does declare him as the king of heaven when Daniel is able to do something that not any other person in that kingdom was able to do. How many of us? And you know what he did to do this? He called his friends and he said, listen, we need to talk to God about this because we need to be able to do this. We need to be able to interpret this dream. And he's able to do so. As he gets older, in his 80s. The next kingdom comes in. And here he is, an older man, who could have easily looked back at life and said, you know what, I've done it. It's not fair. I remember how I was brought into captivity. You know what? The Medes and the Persians have taken over now, and Darius is the king here, and I'm just going to go along with it. King Darius knew him. King Darius knew that he had a God. King Darius understood some things about Daniel, which tells us that Daniel talked to him about God a lot. And we find, regardless of what they tell him to do, he continues to pray. He doesn't look back on his childhood and say, wow, I've done it. I'm done. He's thrown into lion's den. And I've always thought, you know, we see those pictures of this little young man thrown in, and here it is, it's worse. It's an 80-plus-year-old man thrown into the lion's den. He could have easily said, wait just a second, I've rethought this. I've done everything I need to do. Look, I will not do it anymore. You know what Darius does after he survives? He makes a decree for all to tremble and fear before God, and of course throws them into the lion's den and their families for what they had done to him. Who am I? And then there's Esther, a little bit later down in history. The reason I put those two dates down is because there's been a discussion through the years of whether she was married to, I think, Xerxes I or II, maybe Xerxes II and Artaxerxes I, and they ruled at different times. And there's been some historical things about that, and that's okay. But here she is, she's a young woman. The queen, the previous queen, has been taken out. Now, we don't know if she was killed or just taken out as queen. A lot of times they just had these, they weren't like husband and wife like we think today. They just made someone a queen for show. We don't know if that's the case with this or not, but they needed to choose a new queen. So all these young women came, all these young virgins came before the king, but they didn't come before the king until they'd been prepared. She went through 12 months of preparation. She could have easily said, this is, look, I don't even want to be here. She's a Jew in a foreign land. She's having to live, you know, their laws and customs, and there's lots of Jews still living there. You see, they haven't left yet. You know, this is one of those things where we see Ezra and Nehemiah have left, and they've gone back to build things. But all the Jews didn't leave these lands. They stayed there when the next world power, the Medes and the Persians, came in. But she receives grace and favor from him. She did not. Her uncle said, don't tell them that you're a Jew. So she didn't. Because there's purpose behind all of this. She wasn't lying. She just didn't reveal her nationality. But when she was made queen, she had favor. Of course, we'll say God's providence works through all of these that we've just talked about. But she gained favor. Haman was an evil man. He wanted to destroy the Israelites, all of them, because of one man, Mordecai. You talk about hatred. This man's hatred is extreme. He can't stand Mordecai. He knows he's a Jew, her uncle. And so Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him, would not humble himself before Haman. And Haman just couldn't stand that, because here he is. He's one of those important people in life. He's not the king, but he's very important. A lot of pressure put on at this point. Mordecai won't give in. So Mordecai finds out about Haman's plan. That Haman plans to kill all the Israelites because of him. And you know Mordecai had to have some feelings about that. I'm at fault to some degree, because now he wants to kill every one of them. And there's lots of them there in that country. Mordecai asked Esther to intervene. He says, would you please intervene on the behalf of the Jews? Now you're going to have to reveal yourself. Now you're going to have to tell. Now how much worse is it now to reveal you're a Jew versus when you first got made queen? But there's more to that. She said she hadn't been invited before the king for 30 days. She knew the law and the custom of the day was if she just showed up, there's a good chance that she could lose her life. Kings could just kill you for things. Didn't matter if they'd made you a queen or not, they could just take your life. Take her out and kill her. All these things running through her mind. And he says some very beautiful things to her about somebody's going to do it, which means God will take care of this, whether it's through you or someone else. And how do you know you didn't come for a time such as this? But she knew. She might die. I mean, we're not talking about she might get slapped around, she might get in prison. her life could be taken for her if she just approached the king. She asked them to fast. Implies she knew she needed God's help, because we understand what fasting was in those days under Mosaic law. She put on her royal robes after 3 days of fasting. She put them on, and she went in before the king. He accepted her. So she said, he said, "What can I do? I'll give you anything you want." And she said, "Would you please, I'm going to have a banquet tomorrow, would you have Haman come with you and me to this banquet?" Simple request. She had thought this through. She had wisdom. She had understanding. In the meantime, Haman thinks things are going great, so he prepares a gallows to hang Mordecai in public. And I just want to stop for just a moment. As I was going through these things and remembering them, I thought of all the bad movies that are out and all the things that are glorified and all the things that are put out there for young people to follow. How horrifying it is to see those bad examples through Hollywood when you have such beautiful examples of people who stood against all odds and would not give in, instead of being a coward and giving in to everything. So Haman prepares these gallows because he thinks that the king's going along with him and he wants to hang Mordecai. And that was a suggestion his wife had, by the way, so don't ever listen to your wife. This is not going to work out well for him. Just kidding. Always listen to your wife. The king couldn't sleep. Isn't that interesting? He couldn't sleep, so he asked him to bring some records to him that he might read through them, and he remembers what Mordecai did in warning him about some people who wanted to take his life. So he wants to do something for Mordecai. So he says to Haman, "Hey, what should I do?" Haman's visiting him, and he said, "What should I do?" And Haman misunderstands and thinks he's the one that's going to get all of the glory. And he says, "Well, I would put him on a horse and have someone lead him all through the town." And good idea. Good idea. So he has Haman lead Mordecai through the city on a horse. And you know at this point, Haman is, he's thinking things through. He's not stupid. He understands things have totally reversed from what he was planning. He goes to the banquet the next day and there's some misgivings on his part. He's starting to wonder, is things really going to work out the way I want them? And while he's there, Esther says, "Let me tell you about a man you've got in your kingdom, what he plans on doing and who he plans on doing it to, for no reason." Because you see, the king's already signed the decree for this to happen because he doesn't know. And he said, "Who would do such a thing?" She said, "Him." Haman's like, "Well, wait just a second." The king is so angry. So angry he walks away. Because he realizes now what he's done. He realizes because of an evil man, he signed something that's going to take care of some, kill some people that are innocent for no reason other than the hatred of this one man. And he's in trouble with himself. So when he comes back in, here's old Haman. He's over there appealing to Esther, and it says he falls on his couch begging, and he looks at her and he thinks he's about to assault her for telling. So he gets the guards, and they put some over his head real quick, and he said, "What do you want to do?" And he's taking him out and hanging him on those gallows he made. All because a woman had the courage, a young woman, to do what was right. After the banquet, he said, "What can I do to rectify this?" King did. She said, "Make a decree, please, to let my people defend themselves. That's all we ask. We know you can't take the other one back. It's been made. But would you please just make that decree?" They did. As a result, they were able to defend themselves. They're successful in making sure that they're not wiped out, all because of the courage of one young woman. The Feast of Purim is remembered as a result. And if you know about this, you know it's still being remembered today. Some 2,500 years later, approximately, it's still being remembered by the Jews as a time when one woman stood up for what was right in a very, very difficult situation. So I come back to it. Who am I? When we look at these people, sometimes it puts me to shame. I don't know about you. With my courage, with the things that I do or haven't done with my life. Like David, these are amazing young people. And if we didn't do anything other than that, those three stories I just told you that come from God, those are stories you've heard before. But when we study the second lesson, I hope you get even more out of it. They're people who trusted in God at an early age. They didn't wait and say, maybe one day. Who am I? Each one of us has the same opportunities in life. I don't know what they are. As a young person, you may be faced with things that I was never faced with. As we look at the world changing around us, there may be times in your life when you're going to have to stand for things that I've never had to stand for. You may go through things that I have never touched in my life. You better be prepared for them, and you better establish it now. Each of us has been blessed with ability. Not just those three young people I talked about, but every one of us have been given way more ability than we ever use. And each one of us can learn God's Word, obey God's Word, and live God's Word. That has a clear mind, we can do it. You see, Christ died for each one of us. And the question is this, who am I? Am I the one who says to God, yes, and thank you, I'll do what you say? Or am I the one that says to God, no thanks, I'll do what I want to do? You know, you just don't understand my life, God. I've gone through some rough things, and as a result of that, I'm blaming you, as we talked about in class this morning, and I'll live the way I want to. Each decision we make has consequences or rewards, and sometimes both. What's your choice? Today, what did you choose to do? We're going to sing a song. We would be glad to assist you in any way we can. Would you please stand?